Jets fans, it's Dr. Emma here, ready to review round two, where the Newcastle Jets got a draw with the Mariners at Central Coast Stadium last Saturday night. And then we will dive straight into previewing round three, which will see us this Saturday at home up against Adelaide at 5 p.m. for our first home game of the year. To do that with me, I would like to welcome my two guests tonight. Firstly, welcome Lukey.
Thanks for having me, Dr. M. Great to be back for another season.
It is a little bit exciting to be back after flat start with the bye the first round?
Well, when you've got the longest preseason in the world straight into bye in round one, it's a bit boring.
A little bit flat. I'll stick with that.
Anticlimactic. Let's go with that.
Yeah, I was going to say anticlimactic, but I kind of felt like the start of a season can't be anticlimactic because the climax should come at the end. But I'm probably overthinking this. Maybe Andy knows the word for us. Thanks for joining us, Andy.
I certainly don't know the word. I feel like if you are a fan of a team that is going to finish last, that might be a climax. That's the best you're going to get. But I am disappointed that we haven't adopted the system of, you know, a point or automatic 3 points for a bye. Otherwise, we could have, you know, started round one saying we're going to win the league. But we have what we have, so let's work with it.
Look, we might have been disappointed really quickly if that's how it had gone. At least we didn't start at the bottom of the table.
Gotta love those alphabets.
We could have really have done that if every game in round one had ended a draw. That would have been a very terrible way to start the season, already behind everyone else.
That would have been terrible for so many reasons, not just our position. Wouldn't have made for a very exciting first round, I don't think.
And it would have ruined everyone's tips for the round.
True. Unless you tipped all draws, then you would have been a genius. But that didn't happen, so we won't play hypothetical football. Let's talk about, before we talk about the actual football, Jetstream tradition. Opening question, I'm going to throw back to two old school opening questions, one of which got me involved in the pod to start with because I jumped in with my food science knowledge and corrected some of the boys who were wrong. You're allowed to be wrong tonight, though, boys. Luke, I'm going to start with you. Throwing back to Buttergate and the tomato sauce saga. Where do you keep your butter and where do you keep your tomato sauce?
Okay, so I think there's two very different answers here. For me, butter is in the fridge, sauce is in the pantry. But, and this is because I was at an event over the weekend where they had the little circles of butter out on the table that are already at room temperature for your little dinner rolls. I think those are the best little pieces of butter ever. And I always look forward to that more than the food itself, is the little butter on there. So for me, it's in the fridge, but I can appreciate the terrible room temperature butter that you get at some events.
Well, look, I have a PhD in food science, so I can say you can actually store it in the fridge, but get it out before you use it to soften it up. So it doesn't have to live on the bench. You could keep it in the fridge and still get it to yummy room temperature. I think the difference, Luke, you're looking for is high-quality butter. Good, salty, expensive butter. That's the tasty stuff.
Yes, completely agree.
Andy, what about you? Where are you keeping your butter and your sauce, buddy?
So sauce definitely in the pantry. I'll never understand people that put it in the fridge and allow it to essentially condense so that you go to squeeze it and nothing happens. And butter, I buy the Aldi, whatever one it is, olive spread or something, and that seems to not really be affected by keeping it in the fridge. So I do that and it works fairly well. No problem spreading it or anything like that.
Sorry, just to jump in there, I just had a quick thought while Andy was talking about it. For me, I think the fridge, the sauce in fridge thing, if you put that on hot food, then you've got cold and hot, and a lot of the time that just makes the burny even worse. So that's why I don't like it in the fridge.
You are correct. That is an unpleasant thing. I will say
it's the very technical term as well.
Yes, definitely. We use that all the time in food science. I definitely keep my butter in the fridge. I do get it out early to soften it up if I want to put it on anything. I recently, though, started a low-salt diet, and low-salt tomato sauce needs to go in the fridge because the salt in tomato sauce makes it keep for a long time. And when you go low-salt, That bastard doesn't last as long. So now mine goes in the fridge. I'm a little bit disappointed, and I think I might just have to quit tomato sauce altogether because, yeah, all the things you highlighted, that's kind of gross.
See, I finished your sentence mentally in my head and expected you to say that low-salt tomato sauce needs to go in the bin or something.
Yeah, but... no, good call. It's a good call. Yeah, low-salt tomato sauce should go in the bin. I should just quit. Well, everyone gave the right answer. That's good. We don't have to kick anyone out. Original Buttergate was quite a scandal, but it turns out we're all on the same page tonight. New listeners who have not gotten into this furor before, feel free to tweet us your thoughts on where you keep your tomato sauce and your butter. I did hear on Triple J this week, some randos keep their butter in the freezer. If you're one of those people, do not tweet us. We don't want to talk to you. let's get on with the actual reason why we're here, talk about our Jets. Boys, we kicked off the season, round two last week, with our derby against the Mariners, our local derby. We had a good crowd down there. I am told I unfortunately was not there. We do have a reciprocal ticket arrangement with the Central Coast Mariners, so their members get in for free with us, our members get in for free with them. I think we got the better end of that deal. Luke, paint me a picture. How was the crowd? How was the atmosphere?
Well, anyone that follows me... well, on Instagram, I guess, would have seen the photo I posted during the game of the field as seen from the away bay, and you would never have known there was anyone there because the western stand for the Central Coast Stadium was just empty. There was barely anyone there. From where we were, it was great. I think the Jets filled about six bays with supporters, which, you know, is pretty standard for us in these games now with the deal. Just going back to the deal, I think you're absolutely right. I think we got a very good end of the deal here with the reciprocal offer for Jets and Mariners members. My brother went to the 5-1 victory game against the Mariners at the start of the grand final season. And for him and his girlfriend, who were both concessions, it cost them $75 for two tickets, which is ludicrous. So, you know, when you start adding ticket price on top of everything else you need, you know, transport, food, drinks, all that stuff when you go down there. It's great that both clubs have gotten on board with it, and hopefully we can continue having this go for many seasons.
How many Jets fans do you reckon were there, Lukey?
I heard there was about 2,000, which would be a good turnout. There seemed to be a lot of people walking through the streets in the march. As I said, the bays looked full. I've seen photos from looking towards all the Jets bays, and it was just people everywhere, people as far as the eye can see. So I think I heard whether it was 2,000. I don't know whether that I'm wrong on that. I think 2,000 would probably be a good guess for me.
So we definitely are getting the better end of the deal because not only do Mariners tickets cost more, but we take more people than they bring to us. So dollar value, we're definitely coming out ahead there. Unfortunately, though, we did not come out ahead in this game, but I would still rather be the Jets than the Mariners, regardless of the result, which we will discuss. I will just say, listeners, apologies if there's a little bit of crackling in the line there. Please don't write and complain to us. Please write to your local member of parliament and complain about the quality of the NBN and the internet networks in the Newcastle area. Hopefully Luke survives and doesn't.
Yes, do that.
Doesn't
do that here. Because I don't have NBN and I don't have it until at least March next year. So let them know, because this has taken us about 15 minutes for me to actually get onto the recording system.
That's why Luke may have some popping at the end of his sentences there. That's not from internalized swears. That is the quality of the internet. Talk to your parliamentarian, people. Back to the football now that I've had my rant. Lineup, I guess we should start there. This girl is rusty. Sorry, everybody. Andy, can you talk me through the Jets lineup? Did we line up as you expected? Anything interesting in the lineup? How did you feel about it?
I was super happy with the lineup on paper. Surprised Bobby Burns started from the bench. I thought he would have been ironed on for a starting spot, but I guess with Johnny Kaye performing in pre-season and towards the back end of last season, you could kind of expect that he would hold his spot until there was a reason to give it up. I wasn't sure how match fit Bobby Burns was either, so that probably comes into it. So apart from Rye Denton, there was no one I was thinking, gee, that's a risk. And even Rye Denton has his moments where you think he should be on the first name on the team sheet every week. So you just never know. So overall, I think there was definitely a solid lineup and one that I was excited about when I saw it come out.
Lukey, do you agree? Any additional thoughts?
I think for the squad that we had available with us, there wasn't really too many surprises. As Andy said, I think the only real one would be whether Bobby Burns started or was on the bench. To be honest, I think with how Johnny had performed throughout the preseason, you know, I don't think he deserved to start on the bench. But we'll get into it later with what happened in the first half. That's probably the only real thing I would have potentially looked or, you know, would have been surprised about changing. But I think given, you know, Houlihan's out, Shepherd's out, there wasn't really too many other surprises you could really pick from that lineup. You know, the only other one would be Kantorovsky if he was fit, but as it turns out, he's still recovering from injury, so you got to work with what you got.
Yeah, I guess that's very true. We didn't really have much else to choose from, so it was probably a bit of a cheeky question for me to ask if you were surprised. I'll just run through real quick. For those who didn't see the game or didn't memorise the lineup, we had obviously Moss in goals, Katrumbas across the back, Topper Stanley, Bugaj, and Miller finishing out the back there. Redenton, Jugarkovic in the middle, Fitzgerald, Petratos, Hoffman in front of them, and Arroyo playing at the front in the number 9 position. Let's talk about the Coasties real quick, even though we don't like doing it. Luke, talk me through how the Coasties started. Was it as you expected, et cetera, et cetera?
The big shock for me was Matt Simon not coming straight back into the squad after his suspension that he missed out round one last week. I would have expected to have seen him back into the lineup straight away, just purely because he's the one that knows what the F3 derby is for them and has the bloody mongrel in him. Apart from that, I don't think there's too many other real surprises in the lineup. Just having a quick look at it, I think it's pretty standard from what you could probably expect from the Mariners this year. I honestly went into the game thinking Simon would start for him.
And I'm just going to ask you real quick, Luke, how did it see to see Mark Birigidi lining up against us as a Mariner?
Oh, it sucked. It sucked. For someone who was such a good keeper for us through the dark days, he definitely helped us get as many points as we got through those terrible few years. You know, had hoped that one day he would return, especially when Jack Duncan left at the start of last season. Unfortunately, went to Melbourne City, where he's played as much game time for them as I have. Now that he's the Mariners, whatever.
Andy, how did you feel about the Mariners starting lineup? I'll also ask you how you felt about seeing Birras in the Mariners outfit.
Yeah, on their starting lineup, it was kind of a league-wide joke that the Mariners was kind of where you went to, you know, seek the future. It was kind of the horse stud of the A-League, where people, when they had their time and couldn't really get anything else, they just went off to the Central Coast to slowly see out their career and pass on, I guess. But now there seems to be that under Alan Stadjic that they've brought in players that have, for whatever reason, left their clubs and have something to prove, and I think are playing for either that last big contract or they're just really wanting to enjoy their football. So players like De Silva, Birigidi, Jack Clisby even, are those players that, you know, have something to prove and could get back to a higher level. I think Birigidi could be a blessing for him to go somewhere like there and actually be seen. And I think on him leaving the Jets, that was obviously, you know, he left to try and see what he could do, but he seems to be that goalkeeper that I think if he just stayed in Australia and stayed with a club, he could be very comfortable and always been the face of Graham Arnold as the Socceroos coach and just make a really solid career out of being in Australia. So, yeah, gutted to see him playing for another team. And I think he would have been that, you know, goalkeeper that we would have seen for 10, 15 years if he stayed playing for us.
Yeah, I also agree it hurt and I wish he'd stayed, but I guess he needed to take his gamble and his chance, and I don't begrudge him that chance, but it's unfortunate that the cards didn't fall right for him to come back to us when he came back to Australia, which is sad. When you started your analogy with the horse stud, I thought you were going to say that Orr had been sent to the farm. So I'm glad it went a little kinder than that, as kind as we can be when we talk about the Mariners. Let's move on to the stats before we get into the play-by-plays for the game. Andy, I wasn't at the match, but looking at the stats, it looks pretty even in possession, 48-52. A little bit. We actually had a little bit more possession when you look at the in territory possession. We were up at 59% there, but we had the most shots, the least fouls, we had more passes. Just talking in general to start with, Andy, mate, do you think the one all scoreline was deserved, or do you think we could have won it?
I don't think it was deserved at all. I think it was 2 points lost. We should have finished a number of chances, but again, got to give it to Birigetti. I think he'll be the difference, and will be, if the Mariners do not finish last this season, it will be solely because of Birigetti keeping more out than perhaps previous Newcastle Jets former keepers may do. So for him to be there and taking that spot, he's going to be the difference. But overall, we had a lot more chances, but they also had a lot of chances, like they hit the post and seemed to just be creating opportunities from further out. De Silva had a few little runs, but he is always one of those players that can make the run but can't actually do anything with it at the end. So, yeah, I think overall it was our loss more so than their gain with that game.
I think looking at this stats, that might be the possibility. Well, Luke, do we still have you, or has your 1980s internet claimed you?
I hope I'm still here.
You're still here.
Yes.
Luke, that first goal, 4 minutes in, which is pretty heartbreaking, but kind of how we like to roll with the Mariners sometimes. So me watching on the social media, I thought it's okay. We've lulled them into a false sense of security, and it'll be all the more sweeter when we beat them. Can you take me through how we were looking in those first 4 minutes, and how did it go so wrong so quickly?
Well, as the teams were walking out onto the field, I said to one of my mates, how long until we concede? And he said, within 12 minutes. And I said, I thought so too. When the game kicked off, Jets had the first half kickoff. We almost scored within the first 17 seconds. We're thinking, oh, this is, you know, that would have been good to get another early, like a very early goal. After that, it just seemed they were just all over us. I think part of the issue, you could probably say that they've had a week. You know, they played last weekend. This is our first proper hit out of the season, where it has unfortunately just taken us a few minutes to get into the swing of things, and they just got us. They just got us while it happened. They threatened a fair bit before they did score. They seemed to they were just overloading the forwards, have many overlapping runs and everything, and then unfortunately Katrumbis got caught out on the left, which left Juric free to volley at home in the fourth minute. But really after that, I think they probably had the majority of possession and chances for up till maybe the 10th minute. But for me, after that, it seemed like we started to get into the game. We started to get on top of them. We were creating more chances. We were playing the way we want to play and not just scrambling to get the ball out of the defence. We seemed to control it a lot better. There was a few players who still had a number of missed passes or overhits or not passing hard enough. But for the majority of the first half, there were a number of chances that we had where, you know, you talk maybe a foot difference, that if someone was a foot taller or half a foot taller or something like that and they'd stuck a boot out, then, you know, we probably would have had a fair few goals in that first half.
Yeah, Andy, do you agree? How did you see the rest of the second half? Do you think that we did get straight back into the game?
Yeah, I think just to echo what Luke had said, Katrumbas definitely seemed to be almost caught napping or not really looking for the guy that he would have seen in behind him, and there just wasn't that pressure to pretty much be able to pick out the man and put the cross over him for him to get on the end of it. Was an interesting little play, but there was a great shot that Matty Miller had where he just got behind it and put a fair bit of power into it and kind of went straight at Birigidi, which made it a pretty easy save. But if that shot went in, that would have been the difference, I think.
Luke, do you think the halftime sub with Burns coming on to replace Tony Katrumbas, do you think that was the smart thing to do and well-deserved considering what had been happening?
I think it was the only thing to do, really. It was really unfortunate for Johnny that he had a game like he did. You know, he's been very good, serving to the club, and, you know, he hasn't really ever put in a performance like that before. To be honest, I think he was lucky to survive the first half. There was movement on the bench going into the last 10 minutes of the half, and you could see on the big screen and, you know, in person there as well, that there was coaches were talking to Bobby Burns while the rest of the subs were warming up. So we were sort of thinking he might have come on prior to halftime. But Johnny saw out the first half, and I think really it was probably very, very needed. I don't know if Katrumbas would have, you know, necessarily had a better game in the second half when he had the time to sort of calm down and process everything. I think we just needed to start a clean slate and get Burns out there and let him sort that out. Because, I mean, Johnny isn't a natural left back. He's played nearly the entire back line and midfield line in his career with us, but he's not a natural left back.
While I'm with you on the subs, the Mariners subbed Matt Simon at about the same time with Murray going off. Luke, you said before that you were surprised that Matt Simon didn't start the game given the derby atmosphere. Do you think he made a difference for them coming on at the 46 or however many minutes it was, Mark?
I think he did, but not for the reason you'd want. It was more he came on and well, he came on and I'm thinking, oh, you know, he's going to be a bit of mongrel and everything. And yeah, him and Bugard were right on top of each other for the entire half, but he wasn't terrorizing us. He was always second to the ball. Bugard was always first there. And when he did get the ball, he just didn't have the control, or, you know, he'd overhit a pass or he'd try and dribble and just dribble straight into trouble, like Topper Stanley would cut him off. It was not the sort of performance you want from a club captain. And, you know, he didn't really threaten too much. He did pick up a silly yellow card late on in the game where I think he lashed out at Miller when Miller was making one of his many runs past him, which typical Simon yellow card. You know, three things in life: death, taxes, and Matt Simon getting a silly yellow. But yeah, no, I don't think he really caused too much trouble for them. I think Jordan Murray was doing a much better job creating chances and causing issues for our defence than Matt Simon did.
Yeah, if Matty Simon doesn't get a yellow, is it even a derby?
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, well, some football was played for a while before we got to the point of the Jets getting a chance on goal through a penalty. Andy, can you talk me through what happened for that penalty to be awarded?
Yeah, so Fitzgerald got in a great position to have a shot, and I think it just didn't have enough on it. He didn't have the power. He was kind of leaning back to take it, and I think the time was there, and he just had a bit of a shot at it. Beerers again doing well to get low and sort of push it wide for a corner. Then from that corner, the delivery from Dimmy wasn't the greatest. Didn't really seem to get the exact height that was needed, but the clearance was pretty much straight back to him. And I think from memory, it was De Silva that kind of just reluctantly jogged over to try and defend it, which allowed Dimi to get a second cross over. And apparently Galifeo, or whatever his name is, swapped positions with Birigidi and forgot to tell anyone and tried to sort of nudge it over the bar by the looks of things. So it actually, that was hand to ball. He put his hand up and you could see him actually sort of nudge it away with his fingertips away from Arroyo's head. So yeah, that is how the handball came, and the ref was very definitive. And I think with that, the whole thing around VAR and clear and obvious allows for when it is a very clear decision and the ref has confidence in it, it seems to be that they then are, not that there was anything to overturn it on, but they seem to be very reluctant to go and say, yeah, look, you're blatantly wrong, when they have a bit of confidence behind them, in my opinion and observation of the VAR process.
So it doesn't sound like there was much contentious about the awarding of the handball to start with. Luke, you agree?
Oh, it was, I mean, from where we were, I didn't see it live. I just saw the ref blow a penalty. But it was very clear on the replays that, you know, he's got his hands up. If he doesn't have his hands there, Arroyo's got a header. You know, it might not go in, but it's stopping a chance. It's hand to ball. So, yeah, no, I don't think there's any complaints. If that had been given against us, I wouldn't be complaining because it was clear as day.
So, Andy, do you want to talk me through Dimi taking the first pen, which is where we get to the point of the, when I say first pen, because there was a retake, and that's where we get to the controversy. VAR did get called on in that moment. Did you think that was a fair call, that Birra had come off his line?
Yeah, look, I don't really agree with the rule of that you can't leave the line and whatever else. I think that, you know, it takes a lot. Like, I know the idea of a penalty is to give advantage to the team that has been awarded it, but the concept of the goalkeeper having to pretty much stay on or behind the line until it's kicked, like, you're talking, goalkeepers have very quick reactions, but that's, you know, kind of taking away the chance for them to really get to it. But yeah, Birigidi was lucky enough to save it, and then pretty much straight away it was, I think Fox even put up the VAR checking thing before Beers had even finished celebrating it. So it was clear what way it was going to go.
Yeah, and he got a card for his troubles. Actually did not think that's where that answer was going to go, with a fundamental disagreement of where the keeper should have to stand when taking a pen. But, yeah, interesting. Where would you draw the line as to how far forward the keeper could go, Andy? To put you on the spot here.
Yeah, I definitely don't think we need to get a ruler out, but for the actual, you know, just, I guess, as long as they're within sort of their, like, I don't think they should be allowed to go metres out, but I also don't think that they should, you know, have to stand perfectly on the line or whatever else. I also don't really think they should carry on like Andrew Redmayne does, being a wiggle, but, you know, they're each to their own, I guess.
Interesting, interesting. Lukey, so we did get a second shot. Could you please take us through what happened with that second one?
So I immediately went to flashbacks of our previous derby game, where we had the double penalty in the 90th minute, and immediately thought, please don't overturn this. I cannot live with missing a fourth penalty in two games against this lot. I didn't have confidence at all that we were going to score the second one. But as it turned out, you know, he clearly was off his line. And, you know, it's, I mean, you can't be within 10 metres of a restart for any start of play. So penalty spot's 10 yards out. He's got to be on or behind the line. That's, you know, the idea is your team's being penalised for stopping a goal scoring opportunity. You shouldn't have any advantage. That was your advantage by stopping him. You've lost that privilege. Now you've got to do the best you can do within the you know, the rules that are set in place. So, you know, he was very clearly well off his line. There's no doubt about that. I just hope that, you know, and the issue I have is that it's not consistent. You know, he's done that there, fair enough, but it's not consistently checked. It's not consistently brought back. You know, even with the retake, there was plays inside the box that the referee wasn't even looking at, which is part of his job of, you know, penalty, penalty kick duties. Let the linesman worry about if the ball crosses the net or the goalkeeper. You keep your eye on everyone else and make sure no one encroaches. That's, you know, that's my issue with it. And I spoke to fellow Jet streamer Anthony about this on Twitter over the weekend. You know, it's a very simple thing to do. But anyway, back to our penalty. It was, I didn't think he'd score it. I was very worried. I fully expected to have another Roy O'Donovan situation on our hands from last season. But this time, Dimi was able to sneak it underneath Spears and get us the equaliser in about the 57th minute, I think it was, by the time the retake was scored.
I do wonder whether if Dimi hadn't have gotten that one in, whether he would have pulled it back for the players in the box. But I guess we'll never know, and we got the points, so that's nice. Andy, did you have similar PTSD coming up to retake that penalty, same as Luke?
Oh, definitely. But one other point I'd like to raise is I love the passion and enthusiasm that Dimi shows when he does score, running to the corner flag and kicking it and whatever else. But surely I'd like to think that he will score many goals in many games. And if he does that every time and gets a card for it, then we're going to be having very interesting conversations when he's suspended for something like that, for accumulation of too many yellow cards. So whilst I like the passion, I hope he figures out a way to maybe censor that a bit, or, you know, do it every few weeks when the count restarts or something.
Yeah, look, if he only does it a bit against the Coasties, I'll be happy. He can score against everyone else, of course, but excessive celebrating, I guess we'll give him a free pass just because it was the Coasties. So we still had quite a bit of the game to play at that point, and we're level. Luke, do you think after that it looked like either of the teams were going to be able to clinch it, or did we stay in the kind of 1-1 vibes? Have we become a boring derby like the Sydney and Melbourne ones tend to be, because no one wants to lose them?
I didn't think that until very late in the game. I think we were, again, all on top of them from when it was 1-1, and from there I thought we were going to win this. It seemed around the 75th mark, and I don't know whether this is to do with Arroyo being subbed off and Thurgate coming on, or whether, you know, it was, you know, the lack of match fitness that the team has, if you can call that an excuse or anything. But from the 75th minute to full time, it seemed we started letting the Mariners back into the game. We weren't first on the ball. We weren't dropping in defence as much as we've been. We weren't, you know, we just seemed very second to the ball in a lot of occasions from the 75th minute onwards. You know, they had the chance in the 89th minute from Juric where he's beaten Moss and it's bounced off the post, and there was a bit of a scramble which led to a Mariners corner in the dying minutes. We had a good shot with Matt Miller, which I don't know how good he saved it. I also don't know how Miller actually got his leg in that position.
And we're gone.
All right, I think we've lost Luke. We'll see if he pops back in. But I'll go to Andy for the moment. Luke might still be talking in the background. Sorry, Luke. Do you agree? Gus Thurgate coming on, do you think that slowed the tempo of the game down, which I think is what Robot Luke was trying to say there a little bit?
Is Robot Luke back?
Oh, Robot Luke's back. Wonderful, Robot Luke.
Oh, good. Hello.
But you're kind of normal Luke, so that's nice. I will let Andy answer the question, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with Thurgate. Like, he seems to be that player that they're kind of putting a lot of, like, everyone keeps talking him up and even Ernie talks him up, but then just doesn't seem to give him the right amount of time. Like, it was the 80th minute or whatever before he actually bring him on, and I really hope that this season isn't going to be another season of Ernie leaving it too late for subs to come on and actually have an impact. So I think Gus did all right, and I think just confidence and game time is going to be the difference for him. So Ernie needs to look at when he brings players in and making sure they have enough time to make a difference in the game.
Yeah, no, I think that's a probably a really good point. Okay, so let's move on then to conclusion of the match. We did finish 1-1. Man of the match, Andy, who are you going to pick?
I never thought I would say this, but I chose Nigel Bougard this week, got my vote for man of the match. I think from our back line, as far as a defensive standpoint, he was the most solid. He was there for all things and, yeah, just seemed to really be that last line of defence that we would normally rely on Topper Stanley for. He seemed to be playing that role a bit more this week. So, yeah, Boogs for me.
Robot Luke, do we have you there?
Am I here? I hope so.
You are there. Do you have a man of the match for me?
Oh, good. I am very torn between a few players. I will just say, following on from what Andy said, Bougard had probably what I thought was one of his best games in Jets colours. He looked a new man. I wonder if that's because, you know, he had surgery pre-season. He basically missed all of the FFA Cup and pre-season and everything. So I don't know whether, you know, giving himself that time to rest is sort of letting him freshen up and come back hungry, or, you know, without having as many injury issues as he has had at the start of previous seasons. But I definitely thought he was very, very solid for us at the back. In terms of my players for the match, I thought Ugarkovic was very good. I thought, you know, it was very solid performance. He seemed to clean up a lot of balls coming through. It was very, very good. And once again, will be a key player for us this season. Matt Miller, I thought, was very good as well. But for me, player of the match was Dimi. Not just because he scored, and, you know, you don't want to do that. Give it to the player that scores the goal, especially the way he scored it. But I thought from where he was in his first season with us and where he went to last season with us, where, you know, he was creating the chances, but he seemed to be trying a bit too hard to make things work. I thought he was very sharp. It just sort of seemed to come to him naturally. He wasn't trying to do too much on the ball. And I thought his defensive work was the best he's ever done for us. He was chasing back. It was like enough for me to think, oh, wow, like Dimi's, you know, he's doing very good. He looks very hungry this season. So hopefully he can continue that for the next 30-odd weeks.
Fabulous. Luke, while I've got you and you're not being too robot, wrap up for me the overall feeling of finishing the Derby, our first game of the year, as a draw against the Coasties.
So I've got two different sides to this. My view is I thought it was a very good game. I thought, result aside, you know, it was a good performance to build on. And I actually really enjoyed the game. I thought it was a very good game. But obviously, you know, you don't want to start the season off on a bye and then a draw. You don't want to not beat your rivals. You always want to put 5 goals past them. But I have seen on social media that people were calling our game terrible. You know, I don't know whether that's just how the game was in general or whether that's a case of people look at the Mariners finishing last the last few years and just automatically assume we need to win. Because to be honest, I'm the complete same. You know, we should be beating them all the time. But keep in mind, this Mariners team is the best squad they've had in the last 5 years, which doesn't say much for the last 5 years' worth of squads. But they also don't have a hack of a coach in the job. They've got someone who was very successful with the Matildas. So it's not a case of, you know, these guys are going to be the easy beats. You know, they will be better this year than they have in previous years. I don't want to talk any more positively about them. It's just how I view it. So I think people are, you know, obviously they're right to feel disappointed. No, we want to win every game. We don't want to be drawing games, especially against our rival. But don't look at their previous results as an indication of how we should go, because they're a much better squad this year than they have been.
Andy, you already said that you felt like it was 2 points lost getting the draw. Do you think that are you one of the people who's a bit disappointed? Do you want to respond to Luke's comments there?
Yeah, I think overall I agree that, especially with the Mariners, you can't look at them in the same way you did previous seasons, because now that, you know, that coach has had his time with that squad, he's made it his own squad and is a very successful coach that, you know, without going into it, I'm very surprised that he wasn't picked up for a W League squad with, you know, his history and everything else, but maybe that is one of the issues. But yeah, I think we, across the league, teams have changed, and there isn't really a team outside of maybe Sydney FC that you can look at and go, yeah, that's the same as they've had. Like, every team has strengthened in their own way. So it's going to be an interesting season for sure.
Well, I guess at least we didn't lose. That's the upside. Onwards and upwards from here, I guess. All right, so let's move on then to preview what's going to be going on next round, which, as I said, is going to be us at home to Adelaide, Saturday, 5 p.m. Luke, anything that you would change against Adelaide if you were Ernie?
I think the only thing you'd really look at is whether Kandarovsky's fit, and if he is, do you start him? Or what's Bobby Burns' fitness like, and do you start him or do you keep him on the bench and bring him on later on? We do get Italiano back. He was suspended for the Mariners game, so I don't know whether we will see him come into the squad and see Moss drop to the bench, or whether it'll be, you know, Italiano has to earn his place back into the starting lineup or something. But otherwise, I don't really think there's too much else you can change. As I said before, you know, we don't have the best depth in the league, so we've just got to sort of work with who we have available at the time. And I think at the moment, the starting 11's going to be pretty consistent for the foreseeable future, barring any suspensions or otherwise.
I am hearing that Cantor will be fit, but I would expect him to start off the bench. I personally would like to see Burns get a run from the start and see what he can do there. And, yeah, I think Italiano's possibly done his dash and probably shouldn't be expecting to come straight back in. I think Moss needs to do something wrong for him to come straight back in, maybe after a few games when Moss needs a break or injuries start to creep in, but I don't think straight away. Andy, do you agree?
Yeah, not to make it one of those podcasts where we just agree on everything, but
am I scary? Are you guys just agreeing with me because you're terrified?
No, definitely not. But
next question.
I think that depending how he goes throughout the week, I wouldn't be shocked to see Bobby Burns start. Maybe a case for Rodenton to be swapped out. I guess if Canner is fit, do you start him? Do you start Canner and then look to bring Rodenton on and just sort of put in that energy? But Adelaide seem to be a fairly fit side, so maybe that won't work in the way that it would for some other teams. But I think if you were to leave Rodenton out, do you look at, you know, a bit of a formation change somehow? But I don't think Ernie is really into swapping formations, so I'd say that Rodenton will hold his place because he seems to be somewhat of a protected species under Ernie. He doesn't seem to really, outside of the fans, get criticism or anything like that. So I guess the only change I'm expecting is for Johnny Kaye possibly, and maybe he could do a job in midfield, but I don't think we'll see it. I think that change for Bobby would be the only one that I could see happening.
Interesting. Luke, can I just go a bit off script and ask you whether you agree with that comment on Rodenton? I know that there are some mixed feelings in the Jetstream crew. Do you think there is some kind of weird protection of him under Ernie? I mean, I will say I trust Ernie, and he knows more about this than me. But I do feel like Redenton's gotten more chances, but then sometimes comes up with the pizzazz, but then disappoints. Do you agree, or are you on Team Redenton?
No, I agree. I will say, though, I thought he did have one of his better games at times. He seemed to be a lot more direct and playing with a bit more confidence than he did all last season. So, you know, I will say he did do better than he usually does against the Mariners. But I don't know. I haven't really been too convinced with him over the last season. Not when we look at the alternative. And you know, for years that was Kanarovsky. And since Ernie's come in, Kanner's been one of those people that now when he's out, you think, damn it, why is he out? We need him back in there because he just roughs up the opposition where Rydenton doesn't necessarily have that mongrel in him. So I don't want to bash him, but you know, I think if Kanarovsky's fit, I think he will start over Rydenton 9 times out of 10.
Interesting. Candid and interesting. Okay, so let's talk about the opposition because obviously there's two teams in a football match. Andy, who do we need to watch out for on this Adelaide team?
I would have to say that their striker, I believe, is Al Hassan Toure. He had a really good game and played well in the FFA Cup, I believe, hearing a bit about that. And you've obviously got the Scorpion King thing that people keep talking about in Riley McGree, that I think we'll have that whole be able to turn it on against us. And also Ryan Kiddo seems to always like to have a good game against us, and Paul Izzo seems to also be played into form when he is playing us. So I would say that those four mentioned players would be the difference or potential difference for us. But again, Adelaide is a new team, few changes in key positions. They've seemed to really strengthen their back room as far as how the clubs run. So I think they're definitely going to be up there this season pushing for the top spaces in the league.
Yeah, I had them up. I think I was the only one who listed them in the top four when we had our preview pod at Dave's a few weeks ago. So I agree with you there. Luke, who do you think we need to watch out for on the Adelaide team? And do you think the fact that it was them that knocked us out of the FFA Cup, do you think that's going to factor in to the performance?
Well, there's a couple of things we could talk about with this because I think it will. I think they will want to get one back on them for having knocked us out of the FFA Cup. But Adelaide also have the FFA Cup final tomorrow night, Wednesday night, tonight, if you're listening to it, the day it comes out. So, you know, that'll be three games in a week for them. They will be at home for the final and then travel out to Newcastle. So, you know, you have to think what state of mind will be in if they win or if they lose. Will they be hungry if they win? Will they be a bit complacent because they've celebrated that? If they lose, is that going to, you know, their head's going to be down, or is that going to be fuel for them to come out and try and pump us on the weekend? I don't know. But that's something else to, I guess, look out for in the next couple of days leading into the game. I think with players, I think Andy pretty much hit the nail on the head for the ones that I was going to suggest. Toure's been in goal scoring form for him in the FFA Cup. He's, and, you know, there isn't a whole lot about him at the moment. So, you know, he's definitely one to keep an eye out on. I don't think there'd be too much info going on around him. Obviously, Riley McGree always turns up whenever we play him. So you could probably put your money on him getting a goal at some point in the game. And, yeah, I think a lot of it will come down to how their FFA Cup final goes. But I think as well they don't have a very out-and-out striker, as has been their issue in the last few years. So, you know, hopefully that causes them an issue, along with, you know, we don't want to give them their first win of the season, as is tradition with us with every team in the A-League.
Yeah, this is definitely the agreeable pod because I wholeheartedly agree with everything you just said. And I was mentioning in the preview pod, you almost don't want to make it all the way through in the FFA Cup because it is a bit of a distraction at this time of season. And now that I've thought about that more, I think maybe that's kind of the point of it, to level the playing field a little bit with the overlap. And maybe that does give us more of a look in than people would be crediting us with otherwise. Okay, so let's go overall for our match, boys. Let's start with, what are your tips, Lukey?
That's for our game or for the round?
Our game to start with, please, mate.
I'm going to say Jets 2-1. I think they will want to build on the result from the Mariners, especially with it being our first home game of the season. And I think they'll want to be catching Adelaide on the back foot with having an extra game this week. So I think we will get up 2-1.
Andy, are you as confident?
I am, but I don't want to agree on everything. So I'm going to go for a 3-2, and I think it will be a case of we will go down by one, we'll get one back, go down, get one back, and then end up with three, whatever, mass hurt type thing.
Super specific, yeah. Okay, I think that's still pretty agreeable for the agreeable pod. I'm happy with that. I'm also going to go a 2-1 because I'm just so excited about the season starting that I'm going to go with my all-in optimism as I roll. Let's cover off the rest of the round real quick with your tips, boys. Just give me your score lines for these ones, if you will. Friday night, Brisbane Roar are hosting Melbourne Victory. Lukey?
I'm going to say 1-1.
I hope so. That would be very, very good for us. Andy?
Brisbane 2-1. I think they're another team that is going to surprise some people this year.
Aw, Andy's backing the new boys. Brisbane Roar, all new outfits this year. I'm going to go the other way around. I'm going to go 2-1 to Melbourne Victory. Also on Saturday night, after at us, we have the Wanderers hosting Sydney FC. So we have another derby, the Sydney derby. Who are you tipping there, Andy?
I'm going to go with a one-all draw.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. Damn, this pot is agreeable because I think neither of them are going to want to lose. So same for me, Lukey.
I'm going to say Wanderers to win. I don't know the score, though, but I think I'll win.
See, I think they'll choke. I think the new stadium, the hype behind, you know, the fact that they're doing well, I think will get to them and they won't be able to, they'll do enough to get a draw but won't be able to see it through.
That stadium is goddamn spectacular though, so you never know what could happen there. Maybe I should have factored that into my answer. But anyway, too late, moving on. Sunday afternoon, the early match is Wellington Phoenix hosting Perth Glory. So the distance derby, if you would like to call it that, as they do.
I wouldn't. I don't like this.
Yay, we finally got a disagreement. I'm definitely going to tip Perth Glory there by several hundred points. I'm going to go 400-0 on that one because I don't think Phoenix are in with a chance. Lukey, what do you reckon, other than disagreeing on the distance derby name?
I think Perth will win. I don't know, Perth haven't really reached the heights so far this season. You know, they wouldn't have wanted to start the season with two draws. So I think this time they'll get up by maybe two goals.
Not going the 400 with me. Obviously, I'm being very hyperbolic there.
I'll bring down the average of the two of us.
Andy, you also going to tip Perth?
Wellington 3-2.
Oh, now he's just trying to be disagreeable so that I can't call this the agreeable pod. We'll move straight on from that. All right, a Melbourne derby of sorts coming up on the late game of Sunday. Western United are hosting their big brothers or big cousins, whatever you want to call them, Melbourne City. Western United are hosting their big brothers / big cousins, whatever you call them, Melbourne City. I'm going to tip Melbourne City for that just because I'm just not sold on Western United at all yet. So I'm going to go 1-0 to City. Andy, what do you think?
I think 1-1 draw.
Lukey?
I'm going to agree with a 1-1 draw and just say that I'm not going to watch this game because I really just don't care about it.
Yeah, I was tipping that one more with my heart than my head, and I, don't care about it terribly much at all either. So, yeah, sorry, guys. Let's switch back to our game real quick before we run out of time. First home game of the season. Are we excited? And what is your anticipated crowd figure, Luke?
I'm excited, and this is coming from someone that hasn't been generally enthused about this season in the lead-up. But I think now that the season started, I'm keen. Let's get into it. Crowd, I don't think it's as big as it could have been, given that we didn't beat the Mariners. I don't think we would have got a lot of the walk-ups that we could have potentially gotten. But I still think we'll probably get around 9,000 to 10,000. We're supposed to have good weather for Saturday, so hopefully that hangs around and encourages people to get out to the game and watch it live.
Andy, what are you anticipating for the crowd figure?
Yeah, I think perfect storm of the Saturday 5 p.m. kickoff. Not bad for families to get there, and as Luke said, good weather. So I think it will be a crowd of 11,523 people.
Gosh darn, you're being specific tonight, boy. Can someone please put some money on that for him? I think that is a pretty good shout. I don't think we'll make it that far, but I'm super excited to be back at home this weekend and see them new kits getting a run at our stadium. Someone said walk-ups in their little summation there, so I just want to give a shout-out to the team who walked all the way to Central Coast Stadium from Newey last week, the Moving Mountains for Ash team, raising funds for their friend who did himself an injury, which is really unfortunate, but pretty good to have friends like that, and good on the club for giving them the attention they deserved. We are currently in seventh position on the table, which I think is a nice place to finish, reminding ourselves that we're in seventh, and we do not want to continue that forever seventh hashtag, and I hope that things go better this week. So all that remains for me to tell you is that we are a media empire, not just a podcast, here at the Jetstream, at Jetstream Newey on all the social medias. If you're listening to us, you've obviously found the podcast, but you can download us on all your major streaming apps. Thanks to everyone for joining me. Lukey, thank you so much for reviewing and previewing this round with me.
Thank you. I thought that was a very good segue I did about walk-ups. That was totally intentional. Let's go with that.
Excellent. Hopefully no one's doing a long walk this weekend, though, because that would be a bit extreme, two weekends in a row. Andy, thank you too for joining me this week.
No problem at all. Wonderful to be here as always.
And all I guess it remains for us to say is go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
Oh, my God. Could you please to both do that again with a little bit more enthusiasm?
Go the Jetties.
Go the Jetapools.
Oh, all right then. All right, we'll go with that. Go the Jets. I'll do it with passion for everyone. Come on, you Jets.
Yeah, the Jetties. Oh, I'm down, Benjamin.